And welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Loaded show for you coming up today. We got a lot to get into with the Nashville Predators and the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll also be joined by former Titans and Steelers wide receiver Nate Washington. Matt Duchene, Predator centerman, joins us at 8:45. And then Adam Vingan from The Athletic at 9:30, so a loaded show coming up for you today. Joe Rexroad, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing stupendous.
Ooh, stupendous.
I'm trying to come up with different words.
That was good.
Thank you.
Very nicely done. Ryan Porth, are you also stupendous today?
I am.
Wow.
Every day.
That's good. Porth looking good again today.
I was going to say, are we going to talk about Porth's
just
looks
shower
today?
Him or, with praise to begin the show. He looks great.
Well, thank you.
That's
I appreciate
hat.
That.
It's a good hat.
Thank you.
A little Cincinnati Reds action today.
All right, well. We got going there.
It's a Loretto High School hat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, down south.
Nice.
One of my buddies coaching their high school baseball team. So
looks, because at first I was like, oh, Lipscomb hat, because the L is similar.
It is, yeah.
But, yeah, not the same colors.
No, yeah. A little bit different.
There we go.
What's going on? What'd you do last night? Watch a little Tennessee Vols basketball action?
I did. I watched the Vols squander that game. Brutal. Brutal loss. Yeah, pretty much that. I took my Jack's car, my oldest, to the shop because, you know, got a car, so got to get it looked at.
Yeah, buddy.
Pretty much it.
How about Kermit Davis?
Yeah, big win for Kermit.
Getting things done at Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't, you know, they're not a great team. They haven't had a great year. But they got Romello White, you know, from Arizona State. He's been all over the place. And he was awfully good. And then, you know, Kermit does the same thing. He has man. He's got 2-3, and they bust out a 1-3-1 on you. And if you're not ready for it, it could mess you up. And the Vols were not ready for it. That was very disappointing.
They were not, and we'll get into that a little bit more hot and heavy coming up to begin the 7 o'clock hour. Some concerns, real concerns, for this Tennessee Volunteers basketball team. Joe, we got off of the show yesterday, and I was driving home. I get home, and one of the most exciting things that's happened to me in months took place yesterday. I look on Twitter, and from EA Sports, there is just this tweet that's out there with a picture that says, college football is coming back. It looks like EA Sports has plans to revitalize their college football series on, I guess, the new platforms coming out, the PS5, whatever the new Xbox is called. I was so excited. Now, I didn't notice NCAA, not a part of the name like it normally is. So I think EA Sports probably anticipating some changes coming up here in the next year. But that was so excited. I was like a 9-year-old boy yesterday with how much I was excited about the potential return of college football on the video game platform.
I honestly knew people liked the game. And like every year, oh, who's going to be on the cover? The last cover was Denard Robinson. You're going back a little bit, Michigan quarterback from, I guess, 2014. I did not realize people love this game this much. I mean,
oh man.
So I'm at like theathletic.com, you know, at my website here, the college football page. I got three different headlines about this right now. You got Nicole Auerbach wrote one. Ari Wasserman wrote one, and then the whole staff wrote, you know, what should the series include? Got what recruiting should look like, and then of course, like you said, name, image, likeness. That's a big part of this, of course. But I mean, it's people are going nuts about this stuff. I didn't realize it was. I've never played it.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's so awesome. Like I kid you not, 2 years ago, I went and bought an original Xbox, like circa 2000, for no other reason than to get a college football game, like the NCAA 06. So I spent like I don't know. $175 just to get a college football game and bring it in there. It was amazing.
Well, how much did the game cost?
Not very much. It cost like $14.
Because the last edition of NCAA football, you can go on eBay, and that game, especially during the pandemic, was going well over $100.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
People would – I mean, I should have waited. I had a – Xbox 360, where I had NCAA football, and the Xbox 360 got the permanent Red Rings of Death.
Oh, man.
And I moved on to the PS3 or 4 or whatever, and I sold my copy of NCAA football for like $70.
Yeah.
But I should have waited.
Yeah, you could have made some big-time money with that. Yeah. No, it was all the rage during the pandemic. I remember when like Barstool did their thing on NCAA and they were at Tennessee with Coach Duggs or whatever it was. That
Big
was the
Cat.
Most yeah, that was the most success like a Tennessee football program has had in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
It's been great.
Would Tennessee fans like him as your actual coach
maybe,
right now?
Maybe so.
What was his name?
I think it was Coach Duggs.
Gus Duggerton.
Yeah.
Gus Duggerton. Big dude.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
a little hefty.
Big Cat had
like
a million. He had like a million people watching on one of the games. A million people.
And so he was playing what? He was playing like the most recent
version. Yeah, NCAA 14.
Yeah.
And he was doing like a. Not a franchise, whatever. I forget what they call it, like career mode, with a coach. And he kept jumping from school to school. And when he got on with Tennessee, that's when Vol Twitter really took off with that.
Yeah. T-shirts were made, all sorts of stuff. My brother's got a T-shirt of that.
Wow.
It's amazing.
So are you, is it, because obviously we'll see what happens. Like you said, name, image, likeness is a part of this. But right now, like, they're not going to have players who resemble, because that's what it was, right?
Right,
I mean, it's basically like, hey, here's a player who strangely resembles the Tennessee quarterback, who is the Tennessee quarterback.
Where's the same number?
Yeah, he doesn't get any money, but hey, let's be just like him. So this game, you know, reportedly here, like, it's just going to be generic players, like, you know, whoever. Like, they're not going to have a Devontae Smith for Alabama comp.
I think that's the plan. I think by the time the game actually comes out that we'll have some movement on the name, image, likeness stuff. Like, it's not coming out this year. And that was the lone disappointment of yesterday. I was like, man, I want it to come out right now. It looks like it's not coming out this year. I would expect that by the time this comes out, whether it's 2022, 2023, that there will be some movement on name, image, and likeness. And you can come up with some, I guess, some, what do you call it, group agreements with schools to have their players put in there.
Right.
Well, what the actual word is, the technical term.
Yeah, group licensing.
Yeah, I mean, there it is. That's what I was looking for.
Well, and you could, and it could be, you know, like someone representing the players at large, too, to get a cut of this. So hopefully that's the case. Bring it, then put their names on it. And you, I mean, how much fun would that be, you know?
Oh, it'd be awesome. Yeah.
Let them have a cut, put their names on it. You don't have to pretend anymore, and, you know.
Quarterback number 15 for Tennessee can be Harrison Bailey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Brad Nessler will say Harrison Bailey.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
You think there's no reason
for
back on
there's no reason for it not to happen.
I would agree. It was funny to watch like Joe Burrow tweet about this yesterday. He's like, my lifelong dream was to be on the cover of this video game, and the year after I'm gone, it's coming back. Like, think about some of the cover athletes they've missed out on the last few years. Tua?
Yeah.
Joe Burrow? A lot of Alabama players.
Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray.
I bet Baker Mayfield would have been on
be
there.
He'd be a good one. Well, David Ubbin had a good idea. He's like, the first cover should be like a collage of all of who would have been on the cover.
Yeah.
You know, you could do that. You could have a bunch of people who would have been over the last few years.
No Vols on
maybe
that
a little
list?
Derrick Henry, possibly, on there. Some Christian McCaffrey. You know, you got some good ones in there.
No Vols on that list? Maybe a little Josh Dobbs action.
Juwan Jennings, Vanderbilt fans, what do you think? Juwan Jennings?
Yeah, put Juwan Jennings on the cover of it.
Jalen Hurd.
Yeah.
Shy Tuttle falling on a helmet. There are all kinds of possibilities.
I'm sure that there are Butch Jones with a trash can holding it up.
Yeah.
People used to Photoshop the image of Butch Jones and the trash can on the cover of NCAA 14. It was great.
Derek Dooley with the binocular thing.
Oh, yes, the Rommel glasses.
Yeah.
Oh, man, all the possibilities are endless. Like, as you look, because I don't think we're that far away from name, image, and likeness agreements in college sports being changed. How much could that change just the landscape of this sport and what we see coming out? Because it feels like that's going to happen. I mean, we've talked about, you know, the transfer rule being inevitable, but also name, image, and likeness being inevitable for these athletes. What all is that going to change in college sports?
Well, the NCAA is working as hard as it possibly can to make it as minimal as possible, unfortunately, and not surprisingly. What it should be is it should be an open market. I mean, this could be amazing. Like, recruiting processes could be amazing. Like, we could see the bidding wars. I mean, that would be fantastic. And, you know, of course, as soon as this you bring this up, and coaches will be like, oh, great. So now a kid will get an endorsement from this company that because they're just trying to recruit him. And It's like, here's $1 million for one commercial or whatever it is.
A lot of Nike commercials going to Oregon.
Yeah, right, sure. Right. I mean, but, one thing is, I think people, especially in football, if you really look at all the top recruits over the years and things like that and how many of them didn't pan out, I don't think it would be as crazy as some people think. Now, with some guys, like a Clowney, there's a 10-year anniversary of his recruitment. Okay, that would be amazing. It would be nuts. But again, a lot of this stuff is just basic. Oh, good. So now we don't have to go track down if Johnny Manziel sold some autographs. Who gives a crap? I mean, it's just such a waste of time and money and manpower to try to, to try to police this stuff. It's stupid. And there's so much money now, so much money, and it's gone so out of control that you can't justify anymore that these college athletes can't get anything. And, you can't pay them like employees because, Title IX would make that impossible. This can't be like a straight-up labor situation, so let them live in an open market like any other college student in the country. If I'm a college student right now and I write a song for somebody, I can still be a college student at Belmont and write a song for a country star and make $200K. Great. Why is this a problem with sports?
Yeah, it's a great question, and hopefully we're on the way to changing that a little bit. I got to say, this feels like college football is truly back. It really does. Especially as a fan who supports Tennessee. One of the greatest parts about this video game in my life has been, hey, when Tennessee sucks on the field and they get destroyed, you can go do something about it on your own time. You can go actually play your game.
So you play like if they lost a game, you would go play the exact same game?
Oh, I've done that many times.
But this time you'd win it. Okay.
I can't tell you how many people reached out to me yesterday just with excitement of this news.
Yeah.
More so than any, Titans win.
Yeah.
This was the biggest news for a ton of people, in our age bracket yesterday, because this is what we grew up with.
Yeah. No, I felt very old yesterday.
Well, maybe when the new one comes out, you'll have to play it. We'll test your skills on the it's not going to be NCAA football, but whatever it's called.
I'm sure it'll be in my house, and I'll watch it. And, then I'll get on there and say, I don't need 8 buttons. I don't like 8 buttons. I want 1 button.
1 button?
I mean, I can, like the Nintendo controllers are fine. What do you have? You got 2 buttons and you got move, the 4-way direction.
Yeah.
Fine.
I mean,
getting to all these other things. Oh, here's buttons over on this side and there's buttons over this side. I've tried to play Madden with my kids. Come on. I like watching it. It's like watching a real game.
I've gotten to the point where, and it's less of a thing now, I think, on the iPhones. But when you had the old, keyboard phones that you could type where you didn't even have to look, you're sitting there, I was in class texting people and making direct eye contact.
So you're talking about,
teacher.
Blackberries?
Yeah. The Blackberries or, these Motorola Razors that used to be out there. I could do it without looking. Now on, the PS4 controller, I was following directions on something the other day where it asked me to hit a bunch of different things. So I didn't have to look. I was just like, oh, that's there. You get used to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, the only real difference, Joe, is the joysticks.
Yeah. You'd be fine.
You're talking about the Atari joysticks. The Atari 2600 is still the greatest day of my life. I got an Atari 2600. Well, other than marriage and kids, of course.
Yeah.
But still, it was up there, man.
Still in top 5.
What are you talking about with joystick?
With the new modern controller for video game, the left and right joystick.
Thumbpad.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess those. I've never heard those called joysticks. To me, that's like the stick with the one red button. That's,
Yeah, you're right.
That's the joystick. Yeah. But okay.
I mean, I call them joysticks.
Hey.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, there's the technical you got 2 term. Of those. So what, the PS5, is it a different controller than even this? Because, my kids have a PS4.
I don't think it's that different.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's relatively similar.
Roughly the same.
Yeah. I haven't gotten a PS5 yet. I thought about going to buy one yesterday when I saw this news.
We will be
out.
Buying one when we'll buying NCAA one football soon. Comes out, and it will be called NCAA football when this NIL stuff gets figured out.
Yeah, let's get it done.
Can you get a PS5 yet, or is it still
I think it's still difficult.
ends of the earth to find one.
Yeah. It was a battle at Christmas time. But I think we're on the other side of that now.
Yeah. Gosh. I haven't really heard much of that, but I'm sure it's coming.
Oh, it'll be coming your way. When we come back, we'll introduce our poll question of the day. What sports video game did you connect with the most growing up? Whether it's now, back in your childhood? I know what Joe Rex Road's answer is going to be. It's going to be amazing. We'll get to that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
They made sure to tell everyone it is EA Sports College Football. It's not NCAA football. They're reading the tea leaves on this one. This game's not slated to be out for another 2 or 3 years because they're looking at all this stuff in legislation right now, all this stuff in local governments, certainly the college athlete Bill of Rights that we're talking about in Congress, where they're saying, all right, in a few years, we're probably going to be done messing around with all this NCAA stuff, especially in FBS football, where they don't really have a huge role anyway, and we're going to be able to use all these new name, image, and likeness laws to do the easy thing and sign group licensing deals with schools and conferences and give us back this video game that can help in so many ways.
That was Mike Golic Jr. from Shanae and Golic talking about the big news yesterday in video games and sports. Looks like college football coming back with EA Sports. Not going to be this year, but some point in the not-so-distant future, there will be college football video games once again. And that was met with a whole lot of love yesterday on social media. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And with that in mind, let's introduce our poll question of the day. Which sports video game did you or do you connect with the most? It could be growing up, it could be right now, whatever way you want to take it. The options are NCAA football, Madden, NBA 2K, or you could go another route on the list below. 69 votes are in right now, 72% going with NCAA football, just 13% with Madden, 0% with NBA 2K very early in the voting. And we've got some great options listed so far. Ken Griffey Jr.'s Slugfest on the N64. Man, that was amazing. The Gran Turismo series. Ron texted in on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The Bill Walsh college football game, which came out in the mid-90s. I think the release date was 93.
I vaguely do remember that one. Bill Walsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Was it on the Super Nintendo? Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember hearing a lot of people who liked it that much.
Ron,
I remember it existed.
Bill Walsh,
all right, Ron, hey, do your thing, Ron.
Get Bill Walsh on the cover there. So as you look back, Joe, in your extensive video game history, what was the video game you connected with the most, the sports video game?
Well, there are two to me that stand above, and I will rank them. The two. So I talked last segment about the Atari 2600.
Yeah.
Atari 2600, I loved it. I mean, hours of fun in the 80s. The sports games were awful, though. I mean, they were so bad. If you go back and look, so there's a football game, and you can, like, if you're chasing someone, you can go on the other side of the screen and come out the other end.
Yeah.
Like, it's so stupid. And, like, bad. It was all bad. Now, if whoever is of a certain age and you were a kid in the 80s, you may remember now some kids had like Coleco, and in television had pretty sweet sports graphics on their games. So I was kind of jealous of those kids, but I'll still stay loyal to the Atari 2600. Nintendo changed some things for sure. I mean, Nintendo, so Double Dribble.
Oh, yes.
Familiar with this? Double Dribble. I mean, if I was the Knicks and there was a certain part of the floor where you will make the three every time, like this. It's like the elbow three. And then, like you go up for a dunk and it like goes you close up. Blades of Steel.
Oh, yeah.
Great Nintendo hockey game. Porth, anything?
Nope.
No? Man, that's too bad. Blades of Steel was great. But the two games that absolutely stand above, one is Super Tecmo Bowl.
Ooh.
Tecmo Bowl was great. The original Tecmo Bowl was great, but I believe it was 8 teams. That one thing that was great about that one is you had the Raiders with Bo Jackson and Marcus Allen, and of course Bo Jackson got hurt, so he was not part of Super Tecmo Bowl. But Super Tecmo Bowl was all the teams, and you could create your own playbook, and you could play a whole season and all playoffs. So I mean, that to me is the greatest sports game. I could play it forever and ever. In fact, my wife has, you know, Katie has got me like a Nintendo, a rebuilt Nintendo a few years ago, and we played it, and then, you know, it broke down. It's hard to keep those together. You got to blow. I mean, do you guys remember like
having to blow on the video games? Yeah, blowing on the video games.
Yeah, that's Nintendo. Now, the other game is Sega Hockey.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit later. So Super Tecmo Bowl, I think, came out like 90, and that was, again, like, to me, absolutely the best game ever. But Sega Hockey is right underneath it. Sega Hockey was a blast. Man, you could be like, you know, Yager, Lemieux, Penguins back then. The Blackhawks were really good. Obviously, the Red Wings are great, but that was an amazing game. Those are my two. And then right after that, Madden became really popular, and I have a lot of buddies who were really into Madden, and I was like, "Nah, checking out, man."
Yeah.
I'm checking out.
Like, I love Madden. I think in the modern times, the video game that I connected with the most, outside of NHL, which I'm self-proclaimed one of the best in the world at, is the NCAA football stuff. Like, I love that. Going back to when I was actually a kid, though, like, Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey on the Nintendo 64, that's almost where my love for the sport began. Little Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey, playing Steve Ruchin, Paul Kariya, Teemu Selanne on a line with the Ducks. It was awesome. Loved that game. NFL Blitz on Nintendo 64.
That was
always
fun.
Slinging it around with Steve McNair and all the and Eddie George and company. Oh, man. It was awesome.
I mean,
loved it.
NBA Jam.
Oh, NBA Jam. Yes.
Was very popular. Very popular. There's a bar in Nashville that you can go play that game.
Oh, yeah.
Hurry Back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What place?
Hurry Back.
Yeah, it's called Hurry Back.
Okay.
Play a little NBA Jam. A little Tim Hardaway action with the Miami Heat.
All right. A little crossover.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Santa in Portland text in says, electric football, baby. Nothing like watching pieces vibrate around on the board when you turn it on.
I got one of those for Christmas when I was a kid in like 99 or 2000.
Yeah.
And my dad and I played it for like 3 days and then it broke and never played it again.
Yeah.
But like that was really fun.
Yeah.
Those are fun. They also, you know, back then you had the handheld, and I forget the company, but you know, the little handheld football.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah.
It's basically just like the one dot's coming this way to tackle you, and then you're the dot, and you just try to avoid the other dot. But the picture of it is like, ooh, awesome football. It's just like three dots. And still, hours of fun.
The technology has come a long way. Got a lot of votes for Tecmo Bowl as well on the text line.
Yes, baby.
Driven by Wilson County.
Give me some names. I want some names.
Chris texted in.
All right,
Chris. Glad that such a great classic game was mentioned. So some credit to you from Chris there.
Yeah, Chris.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brandon from Spring Hill texts in, says, the Bill Walsh college football game was on the Sega Genesis. It was awesome.
Okay.
I don't know if
was
I ever played.
Awesome?
I don't know if I ever played the Bill Walsh.
It's kind of weird. Like, why? I mean, I guess Bill Walsh is a smart guy. He's like, hey, yeah, I'll promote a video game. But, like, Bill Walsh, first of all, Bill Walsh, I know he went to Stanford eventually, but I think of Bill Walsh as an NFL coach, you know?
Yeah.
I always found that a little bit strange.
I think so,
like,
too.
Like, if Nick Saban, you know, was like an NFL game, like, no, I think of Nick Saban.
Great
as
NFL
a,
coach.
Yeah. But whatever. Do your thing, Bill Walsh.
Oh, man.
I don't remember that game, though. Like, I don't remember what it looked like or anything like that. I don't really remember anybody who played it.
Well, it's neat.
Apparently,
I don't think it lasted very long. So
yeah.
It did not turn into a powerhouse, the Bill Walsh college football game, like John Madden did. It's amazing. Like, John Madden, this very accomplished coach, broadcaster, I think the thing he's most known for now, like among my generation, is absolutely the video game.
Oh, 1,000%.
No questions asked.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Which is, I think, sad in some ways, but... Also, it's a heck of a way to leave a legacy.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's actually a good age test right there, because I think of John Madden as an announcer. And then people older than me.
Football coach.
Yeah. So, hey, he touched multi-generations.
From football coach to announcer to video game.
Yeah. You think John Madden actually plays the Madden video game?
No. He probably did early on, though.
Probably so.
That would be my vote in that poll question.
Madden is the one?
Yeah.
Little quality
I still play Madden to this day.
Yeah, me too. I would still play NCAA football to this day if I had the option to.
This is true.
Now I do, or I will in the very short future. So some big news on the college football front yesterday. And look, in all seriousness, I mean, this is pretty big for college football. I mean, a lot of people my age and younger have loved this game, and the fact that it's back on the table now in the not-so-distant future is going to be awesome. So we're all very much looking forward to that. When we come back, a milestone last night for a former Predators captain who's playing at a very high level, even now at his age. We'll revisit a trade made by David Poile. Would Predators fans do it over again if given the choice? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Former Predators captain Shea Weber played in his 1,000th NHL game last night with the Montreal Canadiens. Shea doing his thing still at 35 years old, 7 points in 10 games so far this season, including 2 goals. And Montreal, they look really, really good right now. Maybe the best team in the league at the moment. And Shea Weber still playing at a very high level, averaging almost 24 minutes a game, even at 35 years old. So playing really well. And look, as we know, there was a big trade David Poile made back in the summer of 2016. Shea Weber traded to Montreal. PK Subban comes into Nashville, and the early returns for the Predators couldn't have worked out a ton better than they ended up working out. I mean, you get to the Stanley Cup final in Subban's first year in Nashville. The next year, you win the President's Trophy, and Subban's playing at a borderline Norris Trophy level. So the first 2 years especially, really good for PK Subban in Nashville. He dealt with some injuries a little bit more in his final season in Nashville. Still was good, but not quite the same player that he'd been in the previous 2 seasons. And then, as we know, that was it for PK Subban in Nashville. He's traded to New Jersey. Cap space is freed up. And then Matt Duchene comes in, which, by the way, Matt Duchene joins us at 8:45 today here on the program. So looking forward to that. And that's got a lot of people, if you're a Predators fan, I saw this a ton yesterday on Twitter especially, looking back and saying, should the Predators have ever traded Shea Weber? Should they have let that guy go? Based on not only his play on the ice, but his leadership, his ability to kind of lead a room, and the aura that is Shea Weber. And that's the thing, Joe, that I think is really interesting to kind of think about in this discussion, because I was reading piece after piece, you know, from The Athletic yesterday, Sportsnet in Canada. They were kind of doing this retrospective of Shea Weber and his career and talking to a bunch of former teammates and opponents that he's had. And they always talk about, like, this aura around Shea Weber. And it's not really anything you could put your hand on. It's just that guy, he can lead. There's something about that dude that pushes you to be your best. And a lot of Predators fans were saying that they're missing that in the room now with Shea Weber out. So as you look back on it, did the Predators perhaps make a mistake by letting Shea Weber go? Because at the time, that trade was considered a pretty big win for the Nashville Predators.
I can't sit here and say something's not worth a discussion if people are talking about it, and you're right, they are. But let's say this is on a basketball court and this is brought up. This is an 8-year-old bringing this up, and I am an adult spiking it into the ground. I am spiking you into the ground with absolute no mercy. No. There's nothing. You absolutely make the trade. And you know what? You didn't quite win it, and you didn't beat Winnipeg the next year. But my question back is, are you sure that if you didn't do anything, that those outcomes would have been the same? That you would have gotten to the Stanley Cup final, that you would have won the President's Trophy and had a chance, had a team that was good enough to win it the next year?
It's a good question. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Shea Weber, he's dealt with some injuries the last 4 years since he's been gone. So it's not like he's been healthy the whole time. And that was really, when you look back at it, the reasoning for the trade is Shea Weber's last game in Nashville was a Game 7 loss to the San Jose Sharks.
I remember it well.
Where he looked really bad. I mean, that was the worst game I've ever seen Shea Weber play. And it came at the worst possible moment. And quite frankly, it looked like, you know, maybe he was starting to hit the decline in his career. Now, as we know, that's not really the case. He came back the next year in Montreal and was really, really good. Played at a high level for them. But
he got hurt. He got hurt for two seasons in Montreal. I think his first two seasons in Montreal were...
His first year, he played 78 games.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't that year, but
the next year, he was very
next year, he was very banged up. And, I mean, you know, he comes back his first year in Montreal, 42 points, 17 goals. Really good, really big part of that team and what they were able to do. But, I mean, that was the reasoning at the time. P.K. Subban is younger. His prime years are right now, and Shea Weber's are perhaps leaving him behind. And P.K., like I said, comes in the first 2 years and is outstanding for the Predators. Could they have done the same thing with Shea Weber? Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, they could have, yes. But we know what they did. We know what why they said they did it, and we know what they did. And, I mean, you can get going on a whole P.K. thing here, too, with some of the exaggerations of, you know, P.K. in a locker room. I think P.K. inspired a lot of eye rolls at times. I think P.K., not only was he great those 2 years and great in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, great in the playoffs. I think he brought a certain, you know, you talk about aura with Shea Weber. I don't know what the word exactly is for
swagger.
P.K. Yeah, a swagger. He was, I mean, they lost a big game or won a big game or something happened. Everybody went to P.K. Now, I know – it would have been, to me, been a lot cooler if PK talked all the time to everybody. I mean, he picked he picked his spots for when he liked to talk. But I think he set the tone in a lot of ways for that team. And yeah, you're right. Maybe they still do it with Shea Weber. And I guess right now they could still have him. And you know, who knows what it would look like. But when you have the outcome that you're looking for, you're 2 wins short. But basically, if anybody could have said at that time, and now next year you're going to the Cup Final. I mean, you have to sign up for that 100 out of 100 times, to me.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's interesting because you look back at the way the team was trending, even with Shea in the fold. I mean, you get bounced in the first round in 15 by Chicago. The next year you win a dramatic Game 7 in Anaheim and then lose the Game 7 we talked about in San Jose. So, you've gotten Johansson in the fold to that point. And despite how you feel about Ryan Johansson now, he's playing very well at that point for the Nashville Predators. You felt great about the direction of the team, and then you get younger with Subban. I will say, it's interesting that, you know, kind of the way this trade was spun, and maybe spun's not the right word, but discussed at the time, was, all right, this is the longer-term option for the Predators with P.K. Subban in the fold. Shea, his game is deteriorating a little bit. And maybe you get to a position with him that you have to move on. And that contract, as we know, pretty hefty for Shea Weber. Now you think about it. I mean, look at Shea Weber right now and P.K. Subban right now. It's not even really close.
Yeah.
Which is it. That's the interesting part about this is, in terms of longevity, playing at a high level, Shea Weber has sustained that longer than P.K. Subban has.
Yeah, he's come back from all these injuries. He's playing great. And, yeah, I don't know what is ahead for Subban, but it certainly looks like I think the Predators moved on from him at the right time.
Yeah.
You could also look at this like basically this is Shea Weber, and now Matt Duchene is that guy, you know, in that spot. Which, I mean, we could ask Matt Duchene later, you know. Should you be here or Shea Weber right now, Matt? But, you know, it's funny. There's also you are biased somewhat by what you see. So I got to town – Game 6, my first day was Game 6 against Anaheim of 16. So, you know, I obviously covered all those games, watched Shea Weber during that brief time. And like you said, I mean, that game, you know, Pecorine smashing the stick in San Jose, and Shea Weber just had a brutal game. So in that little short period of time, you know, he wasn't great. They make the move, and to me, I was like, oh, my gosh, that's a brilliant move. Look, there are other deals like this where you get a short-term payoff, but then you trade. And a lot of times it's not like quite like this. It's like a younger player. I go way back to the 80s. The Detroit Tigers got Doyle Alexander, and they traded John Smoltz to the Braves. And no one knew. I mean, Smoltz, who's this? Some prospect. Well, Doyle Alexander helped the Tigers win the division, and I still will say the guy went like 10-1. You got what you wanted there. Okay, yeah, the Tigers would have loved to have Smoltz all through the 90s, but you know that's always a risk when you trade an asset like that. To me, like it's a short-term payoff. You're right. The interesting thing about this is you thought it would end up giving you a good player for longer than you expected at the time. So I guess from that perspective, you can look at it and say, gosh, Shea Weber has outlasted PK. But again, those 2 years with PK. I don't know if you have the exact same thing if Weber's in that spot. Maybe I'm wrong.
Think of how many trades David Poile has made, big ones, in the last 6-7 years that ended up being short-term payoffs. But you look back now and you're like, man, that player that he traded is still doing really well, or did well beyond the player that he traded for.
Look at Patrick Hornquist right
Patrick
now.
Hornquist for James Neal. James Neal, short-term payoff. Patrick Hornquist still producing. Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones. Ryan Johansson, short-term payoff. Seth Jones looks to be the better player for the long term.
Would you do that deal over?
No. You got to – I mean, he was the – I mean, it's a similar discussion for PK,
too. It's a tough
too.
One. Yeah.
I mean, he's – Ryan Johansson was their best player in the run to the final. It really wasn't close. He was their best player.
I mean, I'd do it 100 out of 100 times. You got the pay. I mean, I know, obviously, if it's a lot easier to say that if you get the cup. But, I mean, yeah, and plus, it's not like the defense corps is struggling right now with talent. But, yeah, it's a good point, though. I mean, a lot of those trades, and, you know, we'll see with Fiala. We'll see what he
That could turn
doing.
Out to be yet another one where Granlund short-term payoff really wasn't what you thought it would be, and then Fiala goes on and could turn out to be a 5-to-10-year goal scorer for the Wild.
There's another interesting part of this discussion that we'll discuss when we come back that I think is very fascinating, and it has to do with the leadership. I mean, we hear that all the time from fans. How much are they missing Shea Weber in that department? We'll discuss that when we come back. But first, I have got a word from FanDuel, and you could celebrate the 55th edition of the big game with exclusive 55-to-1 odds on FanDuel Sportsbook. And if you've never tried FanDuel before, new users can bet on either team and get 55-to-1 odds when Kansas City takes on Tampa Bay. That's right. You can bet $5 and win $275 if you pick the winner of the big game on February the 7th. I've been betting football on FanDuel all season long. It's been so easy to use, fast withdrawals, odds boost and specials, and live betting. So you can have, you know, first quarter of the Super Bowl. You want to jump in on the action? You're able to do that at that time. So just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use promo code ROB to get started. That's ROB. FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wager on designated boost market. Deposit required. Max bonus of $275. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Shea Weber and PK Subban trade. Shea Weber reaches 1,000 games yesterday. Montreal playing very well. Shea Weber still playing very well for the Montreal Canadiens. How many Nashville Predators fans would revisit that trade and keep Shea Weber here in Nashville? And Joe, it's kind of fascinating to watch how the opinions on this trade have moved. I mean, you revisit this discussion a year and a half, 2 years into it. I'm not sure if there's a person alive that would have thought Montreal won this trade, outside of maybe Mark Bergevin, the general manager for the Canadiens that made the trade. I mean, PK Subban was playing at a Norris Trophy level. The Preds had just gotten to the Cup final. They had won the President's Trophy the year after that, and things were going really well for the Nashville Predators. And Shea Weber had a great first season in Montreal. His second season, very short, lots of injuries involved. And really, it's his next two seasons. I mean, 26 games, 58 games the next regular season. It took him some time to really get his health back and get to playing at an elite level again. But he's done that last year, another very good season with the Canadiens, and so far off to a great start this year. The part that Predators fans, I think, bring up more than anything now is the leadership aspect of this. And you and I have had this discussion about Roman Josi and being a captain in the NHL and how I think at times that's heavily overrated. But I will say, like, just watching the respect around the league from Shea Weber, you could tell that dude as a captain is very effective and people follow what he does. Do you think the Predators are missing him from that standpoint and maybe not having him in the room as a leader and not having a guy with him, like Mike Fisher that was in the room, is really affecting this team in a negative way?
No.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I just, I get it. It's not. I'm not saying leadership doesn't matter. It does. I think Roman Yossi is a very respected guy. And I don't – look, if you said, okay, here's this guy and here's this guy, door A and door B, pick which one you would want to be your captain. And it's Shea Weber and Roman Yossi, I'll go Shea Weber. I feel like he's got a little intimidation thing to him, whether he's – and again, it's funny because I wrote about this last year and talked to Shea Weber, and he was like, yeah, pretty much he's exactly what I was like. You know, they're really good friends. But I think we've talked about this. It's a little bit misunderstood with him, like he's this screaming, raging Hulk
yeah.
who's throwing guys against lockers and demanding. I mean, look at this Nashville Predators team, watch them play, and tell me that there's some raging captain in there that all of a sudden it's going to be way different. I guess you could say, babe, maybe you take a few less, dumb penalties or something. But it's what they are, what they are. And I think you're right that whole thing with captain is a little bit, this is the person who talks to the officials.
Yeah.
And yes, this is the person who stands up in the room and speaks. But you better have good relationships and good leadership across your locker room. And how many teams out in this league right now have a captain who is that kind of what we, the stereotypical big screaming, yelling, holding everyone accountable captain?
It doesn't happen a ton anymore. Not in today's NHL. Like every now and then, do you need somebody to come in there and really get after you? Maybe, yeah. And I'm sure at times that happens with Yossi throughout the season. Just because you don't see Yossi, on the ice screaming at his teammates doesn't mean behind closed doors there aren't some passionate things happen. Like, I know how competitive Roman Yossi is. I've been around that guy. I know how competitive Shea Weber is. It's pretty similar. I mean, I get it. You're talking about this 6'4", 235-pound Canadian guy who looks like he lives in the woods in Shea Weber, and then you've got the GQ model from Switzerland in Roman Yossi. And you think, well, how could those guys possibly be on the same wavelength in terms of their leadership style? But it's not that different. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you they're exactly the same because they're not. But it's not that different from what Shea Weber was here. Now, physically, like on the ice, is Roman Yossi as imposing as Shea Weber? No. I'm not sure anybody other than like Zdeno Chara is as imposing as Shea Weber is on the ice. But other than that, there's not a ton of difference in the way they lead. Neither guy says a ton. It's all about what they do. And I think players follow that.
Yeah. And so Roman Yossi just won the Norris. He had an incredible season. He was great last year. I think you're right. I think he had, I don't know. I guess I'd be surprised to see like Yossi screaming or anything like that. But he had conversations with the group, with individuals. He does the job that a captain does, and it still was a very erratic up and down team. If you put Shea Weber in that last year's team and just say and take all the captain duties and just give them to Shea, because Shea on the ice, okay, no, there's something that's different.
Yeah,
that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about leadership. So if you put Shea Weber in his shoes and just give him all those conversations and all the talks were Shea Weber instead of Roman Yossi, and everything else is the same. I don't think there's a single game difference there, And again, that kind of goes to a little how we overrate that position. But I think Yossi is a guy who set. I think that's probably your best bet as a captain is you hope it's a great player who does everything right, who shows up early, who works harder, works as hard as anyone, all that stuff. And I think that's Yossi. If you have a roster that's not complete, if you have an inconsistent team, if you have stars who aren't, producing, what's a captain doing there?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean can Yossi get to Johansson and, throw him against the locker?
I'm going to doubt that happens.
Yeah. And if it did, what would it do?
Probably not much. Probably would cause more harm than good at that point. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And bring in Bob from Antioch, who wants to weigh in. Bob, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Well, thanks for having this topic. I love Weber and Subban. I think they're both great players. I think that at the time that the trade was made, it was better for the Predators to have Subban because in previous playoffs, Weber was a little bit slow, people getting around him. I think that Subban was a much better fit for the style of play that they had then. I don't think that they would have made the Cup final if Weber had been there in place of Subban. But now, obviously, Weber is playing much better than Subban. But at the time, I think it was the right trade. I want to ask you guys this before I get off. Eklund on HockeyBuzz.com had a really interesting blog yesterday about Duchesne and Johansson, basically saying that he felt that Hines should bench both of those guys and let the younger players in just to send a message. Did you see that blog, and what do you think about that?
Hey, thanks, Bob. We'll talk about that. I mean, look, they've kind of gone down that road before last year with Hines and taking away ice time. And look, I don't know how much good at this point benching players is going to do. And number one, like, again, I view those two guys very differently. I think Matt Duchesne's doing all the right things. Like, he's not scoring, and that's not acceptable. Like, he's got to put the puck in the back of the net. That's what he's paid to do. But Matt Duchesne, I think, is playing pretty well. I think benching him sends the wrong message.
Yeah, you don't punish someone because they're snake-bitten. And again, right, like you said, you have to produce, but nothing he's doing or not doing deserves punishment.
Right. Now, you got to bear down and put it in the net. I mean, that's what you're paid to do, and I realize that. But I'd probably be a little bit more willing to have that conversation with Ryan Johansson. But even him, like, at this point, I don't know what that solves. You've either got to let him play his way out of this, or, quite frankly, realize at the end of this that maybe it's just not going to work and move on from there. But I think the point of letting some younger guys come in and play is a good one. I mean, Tolvanen, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. This team needs offense, and if you've got younger guys that may be able to provide that, probably time to start giving some of them a shot to see what you can do in that area. But I don't know if I would do that at the expense of, you know, Duchesne and Johansson's ice time. I think you've got to let them see if they can dig their way out of this. And Bob brought up another great point there in terms of, like, Shea Weber and his speed in the playoffs the year before. I think, to his credit, that's been something that he's really worked on. Like, and he talked about that yesterday in his press conference, kind of looking back at his career. He switched from more of, you know, strength training and trying to be this mountain of a man to adapting, to playing the speed game and trying to get faster and trying to be quicker. And I think he is. Now, he's 35, so I don't know, you know, what his top level of speed is going to be from now on, but I do think he has evolved in that regard. Like, he's not a burner. Like, he's not Roman Josi out there, but you're not seeing Shea Weber just getting skated around anymore. Like, to Bob's point, I think he was at times in the playoffs.
Yeah. And I agree. We'll never know. I mean, certainly, it's not like it's crazy to think that the Preds could have made that run with Weber in place of Subban. But let's remember how clutch Subban was. He wasn't just the guy who was out there, you know, he'd guarantee a win, or he'd get into it with Crosby and all that stuff. But he was making huge plays, including a goal that should have counted that maybe swings the outcome of the last series, by the way.
I'm not sure if there has ever been a pairing that's played better defensively than Subban and Ekholm did in that time in the playoffs. Not league history, but with the Predators. With the Predators, I'm not sure there's ever been a pairing that's been better.
They were incredible, and they got the matchups, and they were absolutely physical. I mean, it was something to behold. So you gotta, and again, Subban was run up for the Norris, was that his second year, right?
Second year.
Yeah. I mean, those 2 years, you sign up for that. Yes, you thought you were signing up for a longer term, and I get that, but I think you got exactly what you were looking for there.
When we come back, we will switch gears and get into the Tennessee Volunteers. First, on the basketball front, another loss last night for Tennessee. How concerned are we about this group moving forward? We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.